Okay. It's October 8th, 2020. I'm Ethan Sharp, and I'm here with Sean Bumpus. And Sean, would you like to introduce yourself?
All right. Hi, everybody. My name is Sean Bumpus. I go by my middle name, Quran, in the community. So a lot of people know me by two different ways, Sean or Quran, but
Okay.
either one, it doesn't. I
I'm glad you
respond to
clarified
both.
that because I was wondering about that.
Yeah, most people I guess because when I grew up a church boy, and so Quran separated me from the church world.
I
So
see.
that's
I see.
why.
I see. I see. So you go by both names then. I guess I'll continue calling you Sean, I guess, since that's what I know you by. So we're both here in Lexington, Kentucky. And Sean, I'd like for you to, if you could start us off by, talking about where you were born, where you grew up, and what your personal journey has been, through your life.
All right, of course, my name is Sean Bumpus. I grew up here in Lexington, Kentucky. I went to school here. After I graduated from high school, Bryan Station High School, I attended the University of Kentucky. Throughout my youthhood, I guess I can say, I was a church boy, so I was licensed to minister at the
Oh,
age
really?
of 15.
Oh,
And
yeah, wow.
I was ordained to minister at the age of 19. I went that role, and I went to Temple Bible College, and I received an associate degree in Christian counseling. And then I end up getting my bachelor's with University of Kentucky in Family Consumer Science and Business Management. Right now, I'm currently working on my master's with the University of Phoenix, and I'm doing that into family counseling. When I got out of high school, I went to UK and I also did the AmeriCorps program through Community Action, and that's what got me into community services. Then about 2000 and I say 12 and 13. Well, no, actually 2000 and year 2000, I joined in a cultural world called the Ball Community. It's like an underground LGBTQ community, and I became a part of a house, and it was called the House of Lamour. So a lot of people know me as Karan Lamour. That's a tie to a family, and if people want to know like what that means, is a good TV show, Pose, that comes out, talks about that. So when I look at the television show Pose, I'd be like, okay, that was my life. And so after that, about 2012, another house parent named John Bentley asked me to join forces with him and bring a pride for people of color to Lexington. And we did, and we formed what is now called nowadays Bluegrass Black Pride, which is in Lexington, Kentucky. And then in 2016, I stepped away from Bluegrass Black Pride and created Kentucky Black Pride. And Kentucky Black Pride serves for the whole state of Kentucky, not just Lexington, meaning we have chapters in Louisville, Covington, and Bowling Green. So we're more for the state of Kentucky, where Bluegrass Black Pride focused on the area of Fayette County.
So
So.
Bluegrass Black Pride is like a chapter of Kentucky Black Pride or
No, we're
not.
separate, but we do similarity things. I love Bluegrass Black Pride, Mark Johnson and Raynette Jones. I'm really, really good friends with them. My vision was more for younger. I went towards those who a lot of time people don't understand, like when teenagers are 13 and up, and they're coming out, they don't have no one to turn to. So I advocate for that generation as well as anyone 18 and older, just helping them talk to their parents, talk to their family. If they don't get that more support, give them that more support. And that's where I focus more with Kentucky Black Pride.
And do you bring your personal story into that outreach, your personal experience with coming out and all that.
Exactly. And see, and with me being part of a LGBTQ gay house, the House of Lamour, we have a family, and where you have like a mother and a father, and then okay. mother and father is the more like your mentor. Uh-huh. I'm a father. I have the most children in the state of Kentucky. I had 63.
Oh, really?
63 gay children.
Oh, really? Wow.
And I had, I lived in Louisville, Kentucky for 7 years. I had a lot of kids live with me. When I say kids, they're not, they was 18 and older, put like that.
Yeah.
I had one person live with me. He just turned 18, and his adopted mother put him out because of his lifestyle. And so during Christmas, you know, just have him there and giving him gifts and, you know, still showing him love. And, you know, now he's connected with his biological family, which is what's happened, and they're more receiving. But just for a person to realize that, hey, I was raised by this person, and because of my identity, because of my sexual orientation, I'm now no longer accepted in my family. So that's been a struggle. So that's been my whole push for the community. My heart and passion for those who are considered the underdog or those who are rejected. I have a passion and a burning for, and I think that's also why I work with the VISTA program, because the VISTA program helps nonprofits stay sustainable. So it all ties in together.
I agree. Is it a physical house then?
House, it's sort of like an organization.
I'm sorry.
A social club.
But
now somehow, you know, of course, I have had many of my children live with me. So they did live in a house.
Yeah,
with me.
Right.
But pretty much just know, I just received a new child within the last 9 months. And when I say he's 23 years old, living in Lexington, and just been disconnected with his father. So I'm more in that father, you know, and we talk about, you know, pretty much safe sex, STDs, HIV awareness, know, dating scene, getting back in school, encouraging him to get back in school. And then every year, our house, the house of the Moore, we do a annual Thanksgiving dinner where we have all the kids come together and we ask them to bring their parents. Cool. And their parents come, and their parents get to see that they have a support team, people supporting them. So
No, that's awesome. I wasn't familiar with how it worked, but so it's like a support system.
It's a support
system. You're checking in with them, and they're checking in with you. That's awesome.
You get on them. I've had a child. He's been part of my house since he was 13 years old. He's now 27, I believe. He lives in Milan right now. And doing
In Italy. Wow.
Right. He's doing really well. And I watched him from 13 years old. His mother, you know, me and her have a great relationship. He calls me father. And, you know, to me, it's my son. And watching him, you know, just change and just constantly be, like, I remember when he was like 16 and he got in trouble and his mom called me and I had to go to the school and get on him. Wow. So that's how the relationship works.
that is awesome. So with this year with the pandemic, will you have the Thanksgiving event, or how does that affecting those relationships?
Well, we're still actually planning something. We're going to the cabins.
Okay.
It probably won't be the whole entire people. Probably won't be a lot of family, but it'd be I have a lot of ones that's been there for years, and you know, it's no way they're gonna be separated. You know,
right? Yeah.
Of course, if we do anything, we'd also always practice social distance. We practice all those things. Yeah. Make sure each one, if you feel sick, don't come.
Right.
So that's how.
Yeah. Well, maybe we could just go back for a minute. And so maybe you could just talk quickly about what you do at the Plantaries for everyone.
At the Plantary, I actually started.
And how long have you been there?
I've been here since 2018. I came back to Lexington. Well, my father had got really sick. My mother got sick. And I came back to Lexington and to take care of her. My mother passed away in 2012. I stayed along. Okay. My father started getting sick, so I began to take care of him. So I had to, like, I used to be a hotel manager, so I a GM, and so I stepped out of the position, and I saw an ad for a VISTA program at the Plantry, and so I joined to be a VISTA member, not thinking that a VISTA was going to be exactly like AmeriCorps, and AmeriCorps is not. AmeriCorps, if you're an AmeriCorps member, you work 1,700 hours in 1 year. That means you can do your time any way you want to do it. But this right. you work 40 hours a week. And
yeah.
So it was totally yeah. different. But anyway, I yeah. Joined the plantry because I thought I was going to have flexible hours to be able to take care of my father.
Right.
End up doing more and beyond what I was doing.
yeah.
Begin to love it.
Yeah.
And then the position came available and I took it. And
yeah.
And that's
yeah.
where I'm at now. So I've been there, since, like I said, since 2018. So not really there long. I've been in right. the AmeriCorps Vista director position for a year and a couple months now. So
yeah, yeah. And like you said, it's that organization helps nonprofits.
It helps nonprofits.
Stable. Yeah, yeah.
And we were just talking today, I consider us incubators, and we help
right.
incubate situations and organizations and stuff like that.
Right, right, right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Kentucky Black Pride. And so you were talking about how you're different from Bluegrass Black Pride, but you have a good relationship with them and work right. together with them. Okay. And
when Bluegrass Black Pride was created, it was a guy named John Billy said we needed to do a pride here in Lexington, and yeah. he called upon myself, Mark Johnson.
So
once we all met together, and we nominated John to be the first. Chairman of the Kentucky Black Pride, I mean Bluegrass Black Pride, and that
okay.
was in 2013.
Okay,
and then we put on the first Black Pride here in Lexington. That was in 2014 in September, under the name of Bluegrass Black Pride. 2016, going into 2017, I asked a question to Bluegrass Black Pride where they are, because after that they didn't do any more Pride. In the park. And so they said that's what their focus at the time, that they was going to focus on more workshops for the community. And I asked them if it would be okay if I step out and continue doing pride events.
I see.
And they graciously gave me their blessings. And
yeah.
I went on and started. A lot of time you will see Kentucky Black Pride and Bluegrass merge together, do a lot of activities together.
Yeah. Yeah.
We took a month of February for Black History Month, and we did each day. Bluegrass Black Pride did one day. We did one day and go back and forth and nominate people who we thought was instrumental to the African-American community.
Okay. But do you also work with PCSO?
PCSO. I love PCSO. I love yeah. Carmen.
Yeah.
I love everything about PCSO. And I think PCSO is in a better position now than it was years ago. Years ago, I did have I didn't feel comfortable working with them.
I see.
As I do now. Okay. I feel like now they see, and Lexington Pride period has now seen that they need to cater to all ethnic groups. And I right. see that they are doing, they are very cultural now. And I'm proud yeah. of them. I really think, yeah. I think we have yeah. the best pride in Kentucky, honestly.
probably.
So when
they do the pride festival, you all work together on that.
When they do pride festival, they call upon us and they ask us for ideas. Last year, not this year, because it was due to COVID, last year, right. They allow us to have the second stage to do stuff, and we MC the second stage doing Pride Festival.
Okay.
So we have a great relationship with them. And,
yeah.
You know, and of course, I know Bluegrass Black Pride works with them as well. I feel like we're at the table now.
Yeah. Is there anything else before we get into 2020, like that you want to highlight about Kentucky Black Pride, like things you've worked on, achievements, those kinds of things?
Well, you know, I can say, you know, we're Kentucky Black Pride, within the first year, we was able to be 501c3.
Awesome.
Kentucky Black Pride, we also have done a lot of town hall meetings. I call it Less Talk. Let's Talk series, we deal with all type of issues. We dealt with domestic violence. We dealt rape and molestation. We dealt with just relationship tools, business tools, just different things. And that's all is just to be here for the community. We always welcome all, no matter what color, creed, or sexual orientation.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Let's, so we talk now about 2020, maybe we could start with the pandemic and how that, you know, going back to March, you know, how that impacted you and your work and your family and, well, and Kentucky Black Pride. There's a lot there, but we could talk about.
2020 has been a hard year, especially for me. As I mentioned, John Bailey, who helped form Bluegrass Black Pride, who also helped me create Kentucky Black Pride, is one of my best friends. He passed away on February the 8th of this year.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
And every symptom that he had now, that's before COVID was known.
Yeah, yeah.
Was basis. I believe he had COVID at that time.
Oh, really?
They said pneumonia, but, you know, hey, it was the same kind of features that COVID is now. Of course, he was never tested for COVID at that time.
Yeah.
Then 1 month later, my grandmother passed away in 2020. Oh. And then, so that was hard. And then my father passed away. And so it's been a very, very hard year.
Yes.
Me and the family and friends wise. It's been hard. Yeah. Losing your best friend, your grandmother and your father. And my father, I took care of him for the last 3 years. So he became another best friend. So that was just the hard, you know, devastating back
to a lot of love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And you, and your friend who died earlier in the year, it was a case where he was doing fine and then came down with.
He actually became a VISTA member.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the Plantry. Wow. And he got sick and he had lost his gay parent. On a Friday, he came to work sick on Monday. Tuesday, he didn't answer the phone. Wednesday, we rushed him to the hospital. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, you're good.
I'm sorry. I had a call come through.
That's fine.
And so after that, but yeah, that's what happened with him. And
so he was in the hospital for a couple of weeks. And
2 weeks. Well, the day he passed away, it was on a Saturday. I remember I was there talking to him during the UK game. And so I left. 20 to 30 minutes later, he passed away.
Wow.
And not knowing, when I left the room, I told him, I see you at 6 o'clock. We laughing and joking. And he passed away that fast. It was quick.
Totally, totally unexpected. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they never did determine if that was.
No, at that time. Yeah. Then when my father passed away, same way, I talked to my father the same day. We took him to the hospital on Thursday. And my father was a veteran, so VA didn't allow visitors.
Yeah.
So my father died alone. And so that's been the hardest for me because they wouldn't let him. He cried. My father cried to me on the phone that early. He died at 7 at night. He called me twice that day. It was at noon and he was crying and saying he wished I was able to come out there because he was alone. And they told him that he was going to die and they was going to call hospice on him. And at that time they never allowed us to go see him. So that part of the COVID was kind of hard. And, because I feel like no matter what, they should allow at least one family to be in there.
Yeah.
And I still haven't shook that part because I'm like, I could have been there with him that day.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have to suffer that alone, being by itself, especially when you got a doctor telling you, hey, there's nothing else we can do. Your heart is failing. We'll put you on hospice, but you can't have no visitor.
Yeah, I think that is the worst of it all. I can't imagine that. I'm sorry that happened to you. I've read about that, but I hadn't actually spoke to someone who lived, you know, who had to deal with that.
Yes, so it was hard. And then I'm driving in my car, and the doctor calls me. He said, "I had to break bad news. Your father just passed." I'm like, huh? So then they allow me and my entire family to come inside the hospital after he died in the room with him, but they couldn't allow us to come in the day of while he was still alive. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's really rough. Yeah. Really, really rough. Maybe we could go back a bit and talk about also how, you know, you've obviously been through a lot, but how did the pandemic also affect your work and the your community activities?
Well, it definitely affected the plants, because during the COVID, when it hit, a lot of organizations folded or backed out of the plantry. So we ended up losing a whole lot of money. And so we ended up had to evacuate from our location into a new location because of funding wise. So they hurt us while, and then working from home for a while. We're now back working here at the plantry. So we're still social distant. Community wise, with Kentucky Black Pride, you know, we couldn't do our pride this year, and we do our annual Mr. and Mrs. Kentucky Black Pride, and that's normally in August, so we had to cancel that. So it's a lot of cancellation, a lot of changes. I feel like we've been inactive for now about 6 months now. So yeah, that's devastating. Where Toyota called us and said, "Hey, we got money for y'all." Hey, and now I had to
really
say, yeah, I'm like, "Hey, we're not doing anything this year." So
yeah,
you know, first time we actually get Toyota at the table, we have to turn them down.
No way. But I saw PCSO did some stuff last weekend.
Of course, PCSO has better sponsors. Okay. They've got corporate sponsors.
I was wondering maybe if you had considered joining them on their activities.
No, well, I knew that was, we had in the discussion, we was going to do the day after. It was going to take the Sunday and to wrap it up with them. But we just decided in general just to say, hey, let's just take a whole this year off. Next year we'll just because next year will be five years we've been in existence. So we'll just do a big, great celebration next year and still raise money, still get donors, and all our money goes towards next year just in case we have to do it virtually or something like that. We will be financial stable for it.
Yeah. And it, as being a nonprofit, so are you the director, or are you on the board, or how?
I am the chairman of the organization. The whole entire organization. Hopefully after this next year, I'm planning on stepping down.
Okay.
And let someone new, hopefully someone younger, to take over.
Yeah.
5 years was a great run for me. Got us to a place. Actually, I'm thinking about moving away from Kentucky. Next year. And so that's one reason why. So I'm going to stick around to make sure that 5 year pull off work. Then.
Yeah. And the folks in Kentucky Black Pride, how did you? Were you able to stay connected during this period? I mean, how did you adjust to?
We still connect. We still do Zoom meetings.
Okay.
We've done, you know, I'm planning on doing a, last year we started our first, for trans awareness in November, we did a panel of discussion with some Black trans FTM and MTF. So we're going to do that virtually. It's going to be our first time doing something, launching something online, so people can actually see the same panel. Of course, we had to learn how to do all of that as well. So watching others, now we know. So we're going to do that, and we're going to do something for World AIDS Day to kick off for the end of the year.
So when will that panel be that you're going to do?
It's going to be, I think, November 18th. It's going to be around that time, and it's going to be live streaming, and we're going to do it, host it probably here at Base 110 and just film it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what we're working on that. And then we're also working on doing our pageant in February. Which we're working with Crossing, trying to have it. There's just where it won't be probably no people in the audience, but just the contestants and judges. So that we can, get rid of our reigning people right now and still be in the time zone of the new crown.
I see. Yeah. And that's in February, but you're still planning on it being.
Right.
You're still planning with pandemic conditions.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're just thinking like, hey, it's still around, you know, if they get a vaccine or if it's better, we'll move forward. But other than that, right now we're planning as if it's shut down, you know, we have to do it.
Maybe we could then talk about the sort of the explosion of protests that started and you know how you were your perspective on those and you know your struggle for you know to include trans voices there and other LGBTQ voices.
Yes. I 100% agree with standing up for racial profiling, especially with our local police department, and especially in the state of Kentucky. Of course, we had a lot of going on here in Lexington with our police department and also with Louisville with the Breonna Taylor. But I also, and I support everybody who's fighting for justice, but I want to make sure that we're also fighting for equal justice. And when I say equal justice, that we're making sure that we are standing not only just for heterosexual African Americans, but we are people of color, but we are standing for everyone who identifies themselves as a person of color. And so that's something that we really, you know, that's what I'm fighting for. I don't do a whole lot of protesting, but I do a lot of background work. I'm very familiar with a lot of guys who work with Taking Back Cheapside, you know what I'm saying?
And
they weren't at the protest, but they still did their work of getting the statue, getting the name changed, and taking back Cheapside. And that's part of work. It's not always have to be on the front line out in the community fighting. It's what you're doing behind the scene as well. And that's how I move and operate. I feel like me in the background still saying, hey, we're fighting for this. We're fighting for that, especially trans community. Trans community has been a passion of mine. I got that from Curl Taylor Shim. She was the first person in Lexington that I heard speak out saying, hey, you know, what are we doing about our trans community? And after that, you know, that made me feel like, what am I doing? You know what I'm saying? Because it seemed like I have privilege because I'm cis. And so, you know, it's easier for me, but it's harder for a trans. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of time, we forget about the trans community. We don't understand.
Yeah, true.
And so we make sure. And I'm happy to say that on our Kentucky Black Pride, our boards throughout the state in Louisville, Lexington, we have trans representation. And that's something that a lot of people do not have. Equal voices. We want to hear and make sure anybody who identifies themselves as a lesbian, gay, straight, bi, trans, pansexual, queer, those things, we want to make sure that everybody's representing and everybody's got a voice because everybody's philosophy of how they identify themselves are different. And and that's the thing about sitting at the right at the table with the right people. And I feel like that's something that a lot of time I feel like throughout the whole LGBTQ pride that for years it was lacking everyone at the table. It was more a cis gay men running pride, and then women felt like they weren't at the table. Now, you know, trans and African Americans or people of color didn't feel like they was at the table. I feel like once everyone comes to the table, that's when we can really say this is pride. And people always ask, will there be a day where Lexington Pride and Kentucky Black Pride or Bluegrass Pride merge together? There probably will be. Hispanic pride, you know what I'm saying, or Asian pride, you know, anybody. I feel like we all kind of come together, but we also can have our own individual things, because sometimes we celebrate things different as well. So,
right. But you feel like things are moving in the right direction, right. And in terms of collaboration.
Exactly. And people ask, why do we not celebrate Pride in Pride Month of June? In Lexington, what's so unique about Lexington?
I've always wondered that.
Lexington has a thing called, in every September, called the Roots and Heritage Festival.
Yeah, right.
The Roots and Heritage Festival is a celebration of people of color. So we are people of color. So mm-hmm. why not have our Pride tied in with that same month? So our Pride always follows the week after the Roots and Heritage Festival. Okay. So it ties into the same whole month, because the whole month of September in Lexington is supposed to be Roots and Heritage Festival.
Right.
Supposed to have something going on the whole entire amount. And so what my big fight is fighting with is getting recognized as a function of Roots and Heritage Festival.
Right. Maybe you could talk about, you were mentioning before we started recording that you've talked to some of the BLM protesters, and you've said, you know, that you don't feel like, you know, trans voices, other voices aren't being included. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, I can say that honestly, like a lot of the Lexington activists here that I know of, they definitely do fight or recognize the LGBTQ community, but they only do it with people who, how can I say it, lesbian and gay. I don't feel like that they are actually reaching out to the trans community to say, hey, can you come to the table? Can we hear from you? Let's take a day and say, hey, we're fighting for such and such, you know, because they have been violated, you know. Throughout the protest, there was a protest, I think, in with George Floyd, I believe it's in the same city, right during the protest, there was a black female trans went to a gas station, and as she was coming out, she was beaten and ganged by several African-American men because of who she was. And that raised an alarm to us. Okay, we're protesting, we're fighting for justice, but yet y'all, within your own community, you're not recognizing that she matters as well.
Right. Yeah. I did see that PCSO did participate, organize a march or something.
They did. And they reached.
Did you join that at all?
They reached out to us. Oh God!
It's okay if you don't want to get into it.
No, I, you know, my whole deal was, I don't have to be seen to get things accomplished. My thing is, after all this is mattering, that's when I want to have activities going on. After all this is died and over with, and the Breonna Taylor case is over with, and we got a little bit of justice with the police department. That's what I want to see a lot of people saying, okay, what's next?
What's next?
Let's march for these black trans that's been killed throughout our United States. And, you know, brutal and found dead, murdered somewhere. That's when I want to stand up. That's when I'll go take the streets and protest.
Yeah. So in your connections with the trans community, how have you seen them impacted by the pandemic? Has it, you know, because of the, you know, it's not easy to get together and, you know, get the support that you need.
I think they're going through, like, you know, a lot of things, like, people don't understand that our trans community faces a lot of different things, mental health awareness.
Right.
You know, so they're, you know, make sure that they're stable. Not only that, you know, we're going into an election, and, you know, our president's trying to elect another Supreme Court judge. And of course, the talk now is that, you know, take away our equal rights for marriage, healthcare, and a lot of those healthcare that we're fighting for election helps our trans community, especially like hormone pills and stuff like that. Yeah. So those are things that we're watching as the election goes through.
Yeah.
If it goes one way, it affects our trans community real bad.
Yeah. But in general, people stay connected.
Yeah.
Through phone. I mean, that, you know, at least we have phone, we have Zoom, we have so many resources. So you feel like people are able to stay plugged in.
I believe they stay plugged in. I feel like everyone's still watching and learning. You got to think, a lot of people don't understand Zoom. A lot of people don't understand the different tools to use. Yeah. If you don't have an iPhone, then you don't know enough about FaceTime so you still have to get out and connect. I constantly call those who I feel like maybe living alone and not, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's a big passion. But it's hard hard for one person to do it. So it takes a whole community to make a community better.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's something that I have heard, you know, that Carmen did also talk about that, that one of the things that they do is, you know, just call people.
Yeah.
Call people and check on them and see how they're doing. Yeah. Right. So they're not, you know, so they're not feeling alone.
Some people used to be in touch, touchy, hug me, you know, show me affection.
Right.
So
right.
Now you can't touch people. And so
right.
It does. It makes people feel like, you know, I'm all alone and we don't want that. And so,
right.
You know, send a letter, send a card, send an email, send a text. I'd send texts all the time. If you can't call, just send text. Say, here's a virtual hug, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe we could talk about now the event that you did in Atlanta and what. Okay. So that shows that you're connected at the national level, and I'm just curious, you know, what that was about and what you talked about.
Well, when I did it with Atlanta, I'm part of it's called Central for Black Equality. Center for Black Equality is ran by Earl Floakes. Earl Floakes is in Washington, D.C. And about 21 years ago, well, might be longer than that, might be 29 years ago, he started something where he reached out. Because D.C. is considered one of the first pride to host a Black Pride. And so every year he has gone to almost every Black Pride that's been started up, and he got us all together, and we comes together every year for a 3-day, 2-day workshop conference. We just all met together. We get on conference calls, Zoom calls once a month, every Pride leader in the for Black Pride. Well, I received
leaders from all the states.
All the states or cities. Yeah. There might be two in the same. They might like Pittsburgh have a Black Pride. Philly has a Black Pride.
Okay, I see.
So all of us get together and we all learn how to pull corporate sponsorship and try to divide up money. And we're promoting a survey to for everyone in the African American community to take a survey of how they're dealing with COVID. Back in August, I received an email asking, could I be on a panel for Atlanta Black Pride? And it was an honor.
yeah.
And because Atlanta Black Pride is one of the besides D.C. and Miami, Atlanta Black Pride for a long time was one of the largest Pride festival.
Yeah.
DC and Atlanta go neck to neck of who has the most people to attend their Pride. Mm-hmm. And so they had a town hall just to discuss ways to improve certain things. But most people, when they hear about Pride, they hear about, you know, the partying and activities. But a lot of people don't know that most African American Black Prides also have workshop courses and classes and stuff like throughout. Mm-hmm. And most time, regular Pride in the month of June just have a day. But if you notice that a Black Pride is always 3 to 4 days. So it's a difference.
Yeah, you got more stuff going on.
Yeah.
So the panel was about, what was it? What was the focus of it? What are the things you shared?
We talked about COVID and talking about the struggle.
Okay.
And how a lot of Pride had to go virtual. Atlanta Pride went virtual this year, just like how PCSO did with Lexington Pride. And so on the panel, we had a guy from New York's Pride, Black Pride, somewhere in North Carolina. I can't remember. But these, and then we had some other people, and we just pretty much just talked about how it affected us this year, how our pride was affected. You know.
Yeah.
And when you don't have pride, you know, your sponsor's looking like, okay, where's our money?
Right.
So, you know, that's been the hardest thing. It's like, okay, this year we accepted no money. Normally we start receiving money in April. That's when the coronavirus hit and the pandemic went in. So in fact, so we stopped, we halt right there.
Yeah.
And so that we wouldn't have to be under any kind of conditions with any kind of funding. So.
Yeah. But it seems like with that virtual town hall, you could reach more people. I don't know. Do you have a sense of, did it have more people attending because it was virtual or?
Some, I can say some did, some didn't. It depends if you have a good person to advertise for you.
A good
promotion team. If you're a small pride, you don't have all of that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It takes money. It takes outlets. It takes media. You know, it takes a team. It takes a lot. And then, you know, showing other people how to share certain things. You know, we deal with a lot of people. We deal with older community that is not familiar. Like, okay, this is share this live. You know?
I can see how it's a challenge, but is that recorded anywhere? Is that
available? It is recorded. I can.
Just out of curiosity.
I never look at it though, but
yes,
it's recorded.
Okay.
That for the town hall meeting was recorded, and I can definitely get that and share it as well.
Okay. Well, I did want to, you know, come back to a minute now that we're talking about virtual events. The virtual panel that you're planning, can you talk a little bit more about what's the purpose of that and who do you hope to reach with it?
Okay. Our virtual panel will be with Black Trans and Black Trans Matter. And what typically would be on there, we have a FTM, that's mean female to male and male to female. Mm-hmm. And last year I had two of each to sit on the panel, and they talk about their struggles, their life when they came out, what they overcame, how did they keep their strength. Pretty much we're doing the same things. That's just to celebrate trans awareness, and that's in November. Right.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to say that, but is there a population you're trying to reach there with that? You know, is the title Black Trans Matters actually?
I can't remember what the title was last year. We partnered up with UK Office of LGBTQ Office Resource.
Oh, you did last year?
Uh-huh. Okay. We teamed up with them, and we also teamed up with Curl Taylor Shim, and Curl Taylor Shim and myself was still going to do it this year. Our focus is just to get the word out. It's just to any avenue. It's not one, say, not one area. We just want their voice out there.
It's more about awareness,
visibility.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you about that. I'm just looking at the notes here. I don't know if there's anything else about 2020 that you'd like to address. If you could talk about the pandemic, if it's, you know, or anything else that you'd want to bring up.
Well, I can share this. If people want to know what's going on also in our community, every Thursday night at 8:00, I am hosting Colorful Exchange off of Lexington Radio. And each week I feature someone from our community. The first week was Mark Johnson. Second week was Curl Taylor Shim. Tonight, I believe it's Dr. Dominic Wilson. Next week will be the Tasty Boys. It's two gay guys that have their own business. They cater. And then I'm interviewing tonight. Later on, LaTanya Jones. She's been on the former mayor Gray's commission task force before. We're doing some tributes to people who passed away. Like, there's like most people hear about Sweet Even Breeze, but there's also been Lee Angelique, who were one of the first ones to do drag here in Lexington. And let me throw this one thing out to this, another little history that people don't know, reason why I could take it back, Pride. We have our Pride at Woodland Park. Back in the 50s, that's where African-American drag queens were able to perform because they weren't allowed to perform in the clubs. So that's why we go back to the Woodland Park and host a drag show in the park during our Pride Festival not downtown. So it's sort of like a history thing for us as well. So just those little history that we try to keep on.
What's the name of the park again?
What's that?
Which park is it?
The Woodland Park.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah.
Woodland Park is known for back in the 50s and 60s where they had an amphitheater there and that's where they had drag shows at.
Okay. Okay. Cool. Cool. Well, if there's nothing else that you would like to share, we could probably leave it there. You know, I think maybe the next, you know, the last question that I would ask is, you know, how do you see things coming back in the next year for Kentucky Black Pride and for
hopefully
for the Plantry and everything else that you're working on?
Hopefully, I start with Kentucky Black Pride. Hopefully that we know more now this year than we did. We know more now. So if we had to do virtual, we know how to do virtual next year. Hopefully we are be able to have some people to participate, either if we have a ticketed event where we control the mass numbers. Plantry, we reconfigure how we can serve our community. We have a lot of new programs that's going to be launched out. You have to watch our Facebook to see those things coming. So we're learning how to move around this and not let it affect us anymore. We allow it to affect us long enough. Now we're taking ownership and learning how to do it and do it safely.
I asked that because I think a lot of people are looking toward the future and having a lot of hope that things, you know, that we've grown and gotten better.
My last word would just say, practice social distance, wear your mask, wash your hands, sanitize your hands. The more we do on our part, the better we will be, better shape we'll be in the year to come.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Sean, thank you so much for this.
No problem. Thank you.
I'll follow up by email.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.